Welcome to yet another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Today we return to the book of Leviticus, the rule book for Levites, and we read some more of what the Levites and the priests are supposed to do in relationship to the people they serve. Because remember, they are kind of the connection between the people and God and the people. We have been looking at some of the procedures regarding clean and unclean, because soon we will return to the place where all of the unclean people are moved outside the encampment. And this all seems to be happening in the second month of the second year of the Exodus. But here in chapter 16, we focus back on the mechanism that is used to receive atonement, allowing unclean people, whether sinful unclean people or people who have experienced life events that make them ceremonially unclean. We are going to be looking at the mechanism by which they can come back into community relationship, relationship with the people of God and with God Himself. Now, the tabernacle is the larger environment where all this happens. But there is a ceremony that we're about to see described that will take place every year to effectively recharge the tabernacle for its service of atonement. It's as if it gets rededicated every single year to this idea of everybody needs to use the tabernacle and its services to get back into right relationship with God. And so the day on which this happens, we know of as Yom Kippur. Yom is day in Hebrew. Kippur is atonement in Hebrew. And this, chapter 16 of Leviticus, this is the way in which Yom Kippur takes place. He who is spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they drew near before He who is and died. Now you remember, that happened on the 8th day of the first Jewish month of the second year of the Exodus. They were just at the climactic moment of finishing their dedication ceremony for their priesthood, and they foolishly offered strange fire or unauthorized incense, apparently right there in the tabernacle building itself. It seems as if they went into the place where the altar of incense was located, possibly even intruding upon the Holy of Holies behind that altar of incense where the Ark of the Covenant was located. And God struck them down. He executed them. And it was a bad situation. We already talked about the idea that there might have been some drunkenness involved in their very bad choice to do this. But here, God reinforces the need to follow procedure by priests in relationship to the sanctuary building. So He who is said to Moses, verse 2, tell Aaron your brother not to come at any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat that is on the ark, so that he may not die. So this is another reason why I think his two sons, Aaron's two sons, Nadab and Abihu, may have gone around the altar of incense into the actual area of the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies. And that's part of their sinfulness that they were struck down for. Because here, God says, look, Aaron, you as the priest, you as the high priest, you can't just wander in right in front of the Ark of the Covenant. That's off-limits area. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the logistics or repeat myself as to what I think it looked like. The Ark of the Covenant is God's throne. It had the two angels at each end, and their wings went up and over the top of the throne. The place where a person would have been seated would have been the imagined or visualized location of God on this throne, and his voice emanated from above the mercy seat, which is the golden top that was put on this Ark of the Covenant. The carrying poles are on the short sides of the Ark of the Covenant, because this is a sedan chair. It is a portable throne. And those poles were never fully removed from their rings. They might have been slid forward a little bit after the Ark was put in place, but they were never fully removed. And one of the reasons we know about that is because later in the description of Solomon's temple, the poles for the Ark of the Covenant are said to be protruding into the holy place, the area where the priests did their daily duty. So in my visualization of this, in my description of it, I believe those poles projected past the altar of incense, which was right there at the dividing line between the holy place and the most holy place. And so there's just a little bit of room on either side of the altar of burnt offering, the altar of prayer, where a person could get their hips through and go into the area right in front of the Ark of the Covenant. And so that's the arrangement, I think, that gets used on the day of Yom Kippur. Now, back to our text. For I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. So again, God is visualized as being there, seated upon that throne. But, verse 3 says, in this way Aaron shall come into the holy place. So the only way that he can come into that area behind the altar of incense, between the two carrying poles of the Ark of the Covenant, and in front of the mercy seat, into that very sacred place, is by following these procedures on one day of the year, the 10th day of the 7th month, known as Yom Kippur. So here's the procedure. With a bull from the herd for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. So he needs two animals to start the procedure. He shall put on the holy linen coat and shall have the linen undergarment on his body. He shall tie the linen sash around his waist, wear the linen turban. These are the holy garments. So basically he wears the high priest uniform. He can't go in there without it. He shall bathe his body in water and then put them on. So he goes through a ceremony of cleansing before donning the holy uniform. Verse number 5. He shall take from the congregation of the people of Israel two male goats for a sin offering and one ram for a burnt offering. So that's another three animals. So we got five animals altogether being mentioned here. Verse 6. Aaron shall offer the bull of his sin offering for himself, and shall make atonement for himself and for his house. So the first animal to die is the big one, the bull. It has its throat cut there in front of the altar of sacrifice. The blood is caught in containers. That'll be used later. And then it will eventually be burned up. Verse 7. The bull is for himself and his family to basically make sure that he and his family are good with God. Verse 7, then he shall take the two goats and set them before he who is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And Aaron shall cast lots over the two goats. Now you might remember in the book of Proverbs, it says the lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision belongs to the Lord. That's a reference to what I call the divine lot. And here is another example of it being used. Basically, Aaron prays and says, Lord, here we have two animals, both perfectly holy to your use. They meet all the standards. But you will choose which animal is used for what purposes. Now, one lot is going to be for he who is. That's the animal that will have its throat cut, its blood caught, and it will become the sacrifice. The other lot will be for, and this is another one of those places that I have to come in and critique English translations. I think they are like way off base here because they paid too much attention to medieval and rabbinical teachings that were off base. It says Azazel. And I'm looking in the English Standard Version right here, and it's got a footnote to it. And their footnote says, the meaning of Azazel is uncertain, possibly the name of a place or a demon, traditionally a scapegoat. And then it appears in other verses as well. Now, here's the number one problem with it. We do know what it means. And one of the ways that we know what it means is because Greek-speaking and Hebrew-speaking Jews of the 4th century B.C., excuse me, the 3rd century B.C., we're talking about right around 280 B.C., translated Hebrew into Greek. And at this particular point, they used a word that means the going away goat. That's exactly what it means. And when you look at the Hebrew wording, guess what? The first component, azal, is goat. And the second component, azel, is going away. So it's the going away goat. That's what it means. And it should have been translated out as that. So we've got one goat that's going to be used as sacrifice to God. And the other goat is going to be used as a symbol of going away. Verse number 9. And from here on out, I will use not Azazel, but going away goat. Aaron shall present the goat on which the lot fell for he who is, and use it for a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell for the going away goat shall be presented alive before he who is to make atonement over it, that it may be sent away into the wilderness as the going away goat. Do you remember? I told you to hold in your mind the leper, the post-leprosy cleansing ceremony, where two birds were used. One bird was actually sacrificed. The other bird had some of the sacrificial bird's blood put on it, but then it was let go and it flew away. And it was to show how, you know, all the problems were gone now. It had flown away. The cleansing had happened. Well, that's exactly the symbolism we're seeing here. It is perfectly parallel. It's just a goat. Or it's just a pair of goats instead of a pair of birds. So verse number 11. Aaron shall present the bull. Remember, that was the first animal mentioned. As a sin offering for himself, he shall make atonement for himself and for his house. He shall kill the bull as a sin offering for himself. He shall then take a censer full of coals of fire from the altar before he who is. So he gets a container of hot coals from the sacrificial altar. And he's going to take that with him into the sanctuary building. And he's also going to take two handfuls of sweet incense, beaten small, and he shall bring it inside the veil. So now he has the fire from the altar and the sacred incense that we've seen the formula of before. He takes them both into the tabernacle building. He goes into the holy place where the table and the lamp and the altar of prayer, the incense altar are located. What does he do once he gets in there? Verse 13. Put the incense on the fire before he who is, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is over the testimony, so that he does not die. So he puts the hot coals on the top of the incense altar. Then he dumps the two handfuls of sweet incense on top of those hot coals. They billow up into this great big cloud of fragrant, cinnamony-smelling incense, which represents prayers to God, petitioning God for mercy and forgiveness and assistance. And so it's in this cloud of prayer, in this cloud of incense, that he is now allowed to go around one side of the prayer altar and stand in front of the throne of God. So that he does not die, and then he shall take some of the blood of the bull. So he's also had that with him. And he will sprinkle it with his finger on the front of the mercy seat on the east side. Remember, the tabernacle building faces the east, and so does the throne of God. The seat is open toward the east. So he sprinkles some right there on the east side of the mercy seat, and also in front of the mercy seat, he shall sprinkle some of the blood with his finger seven times. Seven being a symbol of completeness because of the day of the week. 7 days make the week. Verse 15, then he's going to go back out because now he's taking care of his sin. He's made things right with God for himself and his family. Verse 15, he shall then kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people. That's the goat that the lot fell to for sacrifice. And he will bring its blood inside the veil and do with its blood as he did with the blood of the bull, sprinkling it over the mercy seat and in front of the mercy seat. So this happens pretty quickly. The little cloud of incense, I doubt, will need to be refreshed. It's possible it might have been, but it's going to be hanging around for a good long time in that enclosed space. But he walks back into the holy place of the temple and then past the altar of incense, the altar of prayer, and stands in front of the mercy seat, the throne of God, and he puts some of that goat's blood right down on the mercy seat itself and sprinkles the seven times in front of it as well. Symbolic of God, forgive us. Now, the entire complex of the tabernacle is set up for daily sacrifices where that is a major petition. God, forgive us. The Yom Kippur ceremonies takes it one step closer to God, because this is the only day where the high priest goes right in front of the throne of God, right in front of the Ark of the Covenant. So that is why I like to characterize it as this is the day on which the whole purpose of the tabernacle is recharged. It is rededicated. It is focused for everyone to understand, if we do not have access to God's throne through the blood of the perfect sacrifice, we are in deep trouble, because we will have to bear the penalty for our sins. And of course, the penalty for sin is death. Back to verse 16. Thus he shall make atonement for the holy place, that's the tabernacle building, because of the uncleanness of the people of Israel and because of their transgressions, all their sins. And so he shall do for the tent of meeting, which dwells with them in the midst of their uncleanness. So you can tell from the text there, this is very much focused on rededicating the temple annually for its purpose of seeking God's forgiveness. Now, verse 17 says, no one may be in the tent of meeting from the time he enters to make the atonement in the holy place until he comes out and has made atonement for himself and for his house and for all the assembly of Israel. So the Yom Kippur ceremony supersedes anything being done by the priests on this same day. Because remember, the priests are required to go in first thing in the morning and offer the daily sacrifice, the daily incense, prayer time, and then to go in at the evening or at the end of the day to repeat that with the twice daily sacrifice and incense, the hour of prayer, as the New Testament refers to it. That ceremony can't go on until the high priest has done this ceremony. They can't be done at the same time. Then, verse 18, after he comes back out, after he's done the two atonement ceremonies, first for himself and then for the people. Verse 18, then he shall go out to the altar that is before he who is and make atonement for it, and shall take some of the blood of the bull and some of the blood of the goat and put it on the horns of the altar all around it. Now, some people think that this is talking about the brazen altar out front, the sacrificial altar. I don't think so, because we had in another place that only on the Day of Atonement can blood be put on the prayer altar's horns. So I think that's the altar we're talking about, the altar that is used every single day to offer incense and prayers to God. It needs to be recharged as well. And then, verse 19, he shall sprinkle some of the blood on it with his finger seven times. There's the perfection ceremony again. Cleanse it, consecrate it for the uncleanliness or uncleanness of the people of Israel. Now, when he has made an end of the atoning for the holy place and the tent of meeting and the altar, he shall then present the live goat. Remember? The goat of going away, the getaway goat, the go-away goat. Aaron shall lay both his hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the iniquities of the people of Israel and all their transgressions, all their sins. Now, how deep is his specificity? My guess is that his prayer is to be something similar to what you see from Daniel and from Ezra and from Nehemiah when they offer prayers of national confession. That basically, we have sinned. we deserve penalty, but we beg for mercy. That sort of thing. So he does all this with his hands on top of the goat. That's common practice for sacrificial animals. And then he shall put them on the head of the goat, meaning there's a symbol involved here. He's just poured all of that confession of sin on top of this goat. And then send it away into the wilderness by the hand of a man who is in readiness. So there is someone that's been designated to escort this animal outside the encampment, out into the wilderness. Now, rabbis came up with a plan and taught this, even though rabbis were actually living in, the rabbis I'm talking about are rabbinical students in the 3rd, 4th century of the Christian era, so long after the temple was gone. They believed that it was important for this animal to be executed somewhere. And so they had a procedure for pushing it over a cliff to make sure it never came back with all those sins. That none of that is here. This animal is like that bird. It's supposed to represent how the sins just go away out into the middle of nowhere and they don't come back. The goat shall bear all their iniquities on itself to a remote area, and he shall let the goat go free into the wilderness. And then Aaron shall come into the tent of meeting, shall take off the linen garments put on when he went into the holy place, and shall leave them there. He shall bathe his body in water in the holy place and put on his garments and come out, offer burnt offerings and burnt offerings of the people and make atonement for himself and the people. And then the fat of the sin offerings and everything else he's going to burn on the altar. Now, I'm looking at my time. We are pretty much gone out of time today. So we're going to have to mark our place, and we'll come back and finish the story of Yom Kippur the next time God gives us a chance to get into his word.